Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Happy Easter to you. I'm going to do an Easter show. I have learned much as a doctor, as an individual, from what I consider the meaning of the resurrection of Christ. To me, science and the resurrection of the Christ have a relationship. It's a relationship I want to discuss with you today. It's an important relationship. It's a relationship that exposes much about why we suffer. And why we suffer, for a doctor, is a real big issue. I mean, the personal life of a doctor is a life that each and every day over the decades, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you listen to a lot. You experience a lot of suffering with the people you care for. And it rubs off on you. And you have to have perspective. No doctor that has consciousness fails to ask himself along the way, why do people suffer? Because of what you see. I don't know what your life is like. I do know all of us suffer. Personally, I know we share suffering with others. But a doctor that really digs his elbows in, it's day in and day out. That's the life you choose as a doctor. So, at perhaps a younger age, you have to really develop perspective on this. Why do people day in and day out come in, tell their story, ask for help? And lo and behold, as the intimacies develop, do you realize how deeply, how long, how privately your patients have suffered? Now, medicine, unfortunately, largely seems to dismiss this. And I think any of my listeners and most people in holistic medicine know that, of course, this is ridiculous. Your suffering is very much integrated into your symptom, into your chronic symptom, into your disease. And therefore, whether you are the doctor, whether you are the patient, you must develop a perception, a perspective on why you suffer. Tomorrow we celebrate the resurrection of Christ. We celebrate the life of Christ. And it's incumbent upon us to learn what value is it for us to study the life of Christ and the resurrection and the crucifixion and the agony in the garden. This is where we're going to go today, because the life of Christ has much bearing on healing and health and on how you should suffer and what potentially can bring us to the other side of that suffering. And it's been wonderful for me as a doctor over 25 years to realize that there's so much in the human organism. There's so much in the human body. There is so much in science that supports the wisdom of Christ. They should never have been separated. Perhaps science and religion should have been separated, but not science and God. But we have, for the most part, succeeded at this. And I will extend to you today the mistake of that. But the slant here is for us to go into the life of Christ and draw links to the great achievements over his short life. And what we've been given, in that we are in his image, what we've been given in the human organism to help us reach, well, not the same, we are not God, but similar levels. Is there a human experience bestowed to us by the organs put in our bodies, by the systems, by the physiological systems, that can bring us to ecclesiastic states? As always, get to the website. That's straighttalk.cc, not .com. Straight Talk with two T's, .cc. I want to talk to you about the agony in the garden. I want to talk to you about the crucifixion. I want to talk to you about the resurrection. And then I want to jump into the science. So let's, as best we can, in brief, let's, for argument's sake today, go to three or four great moments in the trial, tribulation, and resurrection of Christ. And I want to begin in the agony of the garden. Now, on the website, that's straighttalk.cc, pictures 1, pictures 2, pictures 3 commemorate the agony in the garden. These are Baroque pictures. I like the Baroque era. It's more flowery, plush, colorful than a lot of your Renaissance renditions. So if you can get to the website, check out these pictures. Whether you're on picture 1 or 2 or 3, this is the agony in the garden. This is before the crucifixion. And this is where Jesus asks himself, as God, as man, asks himself why he has to suffer. He knows he's going to be crucified. And I think it's shallow to say that it's because he knows he'll resurrect. I think it's shallow to say because he knows he'll resurrect that he did not suffer. He is suffering that night in the agony in the garden. Now, I'll extrapolate, but he must have been asking himself why. The same way we ask ourselves why. The same way my patients ask themselves why. Bad things happen to good people. And when bad things happen to good people ask themselves, why me? Why do I suffer? Jesus is asking himself why he suffers. Here he is a prodigy. I mean, he's the guy that had it all. Brilliant, handsome, wise beyond his years, influential, charismatic. And he finds himself as a truth seeker, as a man of virtue. He finds himself condemned to crucifixion. The science of crucifixion. Crucifixion is an extraordinarily painful way to die. It is a torturous way to die. It is not an easy way to die. It's not biting into a cyanide capsule. It's not taking an overdose of sleeping pills. It is, in fact, a true torture. That was what was reserved for Christ. Torture by crucifixion and the humiliation of it. Being crucified in between two real sinners, two thieves, murderers, whoever they were. Reprobates were they, with Christ in the middle. And all of this is being contemplated upon in the agony of the garden. Now, what I have always found fascinating, and it doesn't matter which era in time which period in art history we look into, there are always angels there. And you see in all three pictures, picture one, picture two, picture three, Christ as he suffers is almost invariably depicted as suffering in the presence of angels. And I think this really and truly demands some inquiry, because it's very easy to misunderstand why those angels are there. Look at picture number three, if you can, if you're just driving, if you're driving, just follow, I'll explain. There, picture number three is a great picture, sort of a common theme where the angel leans its head upon Christ's head, wraps an arm, and comforts him. And I think this is very easily misunderstood. And even if I misunderstand it, I will still argue from my point of view, because I think mine is most relevant. It is not that Christ suffered in the garden and the angels came to comfort him, to give condolence, to give sympathy. I want you to consider an alternate perception of that night in the garden. Jesus goes into solitude, reaches down to faculties within himself that was supremely developed by virtue of his birth, supremely developed these faculties, and he connects to the Father in heaven. And that communion creates a magnetic field that materializes a level of joy, a level of knowing, a level of connection with something outside the worldly realm. And that this capacity, so clearly mastered by Christ, this capacity, which is a lesson to all of us when we suffer, is really where you derive the comfort. Those of us who suffer, can we use faculties, and we will discuss these faculties later, faculties we have been given in that we are in his image. Can we go in, can we train systematically, obediently, faculties put there within us, body parts that we can call into activation to bring ourselves to a more steadfast experience of our suffering. And mastered at the level of Christ, certainly you will illuminate yourself in that time of your greatest suffering. That to me is what those angels mean. Those angels are not there in the human sense of sympathy. Those angels are there to celebrate that achievement, to celebrate that communion, to be able to go into your deep recesses of your soul so that the gates of heaven can immerse you. That to me is the agony in the garden. And this is so relevant for people who are sick. If you're sick, if you suffer symptomatically, if you have a fate that makes you afraid, I'm going to suggest to you, and I'm going to elaborate on this in a moment, that there are mechanisms given to you that are asking you for inquiry, and that there is a return, a true return, that there is potentially enormous benefit to go inside yourself to train those inherent mechanisms, God-given. And they are about the physiology of you. I am not talking esoterically. I am talking about real time. I am talking about the glandular system. I am talking about the autonomic nervous system. I am talking about the cranial system. I'm talking about the chemicals we have isolated in response to employing, deploying, and initiating these systems that are alive and waiting within all of us to deploy. I'm just suggesting to you that Jesus was a master of it. A master of it on the level that, well, we can't comprehend, and there is the God part of it. But the man part of it, the human part of it, is that Christ felt true fear. As we feel true fear. But there are options. Let's continue to the crucifixion. There he is being asphyxiated after bolts of steel. There he is suffering. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. There, being tortured by the very same people he tried to help, being betrayed. Always fascinating when you hear people talk about stories of the New Testament, how every time Jesus did something miraculous, the majority of people either doubted or wanted him to go away. That's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. And yet if you consider the life of most truth seekers, if you consider the life of most people who spread the word, who are of authentic and pure intention, their lives will always tell the same story. That as you take the pain of your audience, of your congregation, as you absorb their scorn, as you give grace, as you try to give love to those who in the end are going to hurt you, you're ultimately thrown out of the group, of the tribe, making your pain all the worse. And there he is being crucified. And yes, there will always be a few. There will always be a small group around you. There will always be a small group who you have authentic relationship with. But by and large, in terms of the numbers, you generally don't start off in too happy a place. So what is your disease? What is your disease? Those of you in the audience today, ask yourself the meaning of your symptom, the meaning of your illness, the meaning of your prognosis. And as you feel your pain, you'll see the similarity. Especially those of you who are mired in the notion that you have lived a good life, that you don't deserve what you've suffered. Hold that thought as we watch Christ die on the cross. Hold that thought. And all of you know where I'm going here. To the virtue of that suffering. Tomorrow we celebrate the resurrection of Christ. So that in retrospect, there was a meaning to that suffering. A meaning. Lots of debate, lots of perspective, lots of shades of understanding on the meaning of the resurrection. But you can't separate the resurrection from the suffering. You can't separate the resurrection from the crucifixion. Nor can you, my audience today, separate your healing, the potential of your healing, from your own suffering. And that is the point. This is a health talk radio show. I know that within you have been bestowed the innate mechanisms that can deliver you to a healing? Can I say your own personalized form of resurrection? You have suffered, you are down, you are in pain, you are filled with fear. I know as a doctor that that healing is within you. That there's a payoff. That potentially speaking, there's a virtue to your suffering. And you have to wrap yourself around this in sincerity. Do not nod your head in complacence. Do not nod your head because it's politically correct. I'm talking about the you. Deep down inside, away from your friends, away from your doctor, away from your church group. I'm talking about deep down inside, the part of you that fails to embrace your suffering, that doesn't really know what that even means. How do you embrace your suffering without connecting to the virtue of it? And how do you connect to the virtue of it without knowing that there is a wonderful payoff on the way for you? There is a wonderful payoff on the way. After that, it gets personal. Really personal. If your payoff is to leave this realm and be with your Father in heaven, well, then that's your payoff. This is not my scope. You're talking to the guy that works in that other possibility, that your payoff is to heal your body, that it's not your time to be with your Father in heaven. Well, if it's not your time to leave this realm, if it is your time to come to a healing, to heal a disease, to be supervised, to be orchestrated, to be led, to be helped, to be influenced, if it is your time to see cure, to see health bestowed again, you have to find a virtue to your suffering. You have to really embrace that as a possibility. Stated otherwise, you have to consider that the reason you suffer is to be initiated to a higher level of being. That the reason you have had 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years of your life taken away, in a sense, that you have been denied bounty for that long, is to be elevated to a higher level of existence. Now, this is not just coffee table talk. This is not a holistic rant to make people who are suffering feel better. This is not. I am not doing this show today. I'm not doing this show today to simply have a bunch of people who are in pain nod their head and smile. You see, I really mean this. If I didn't really mean what I'm telling you, there's no way I would do this show. There's no way I would be a doctor. If you cannot look at people square in the face and tell them while they moan and complain and cry and do temper tantrums and insist on being locked in their misery and their story and their pain like it's different than anybody else's, if you cannot tell them straight to their face that there is a virtue to that suffering, and they must embrace that, you shouldn't be a doctor. And if, in fact, you can't do that, you have no shield yourself. You have no way of protecting yourself. You see, the thing we call a healing is about a journey. It's about the life of Christ. It really is. You come in beautiful. You are scarred almost indelibly, almost irreversibly. you feel the depths of all your negative emotion, and the heavens are there to open their hands to you if you'll just truly embrace your process. And that virtue, one of the virtues of suffering, is what we call health. It's liberation from disease. And of course, there will be those who doubt this. Picture number 12, Caravaggio's famous painting. The incredulousness of Thomas. Thomas cannot believe that Christ has resurrected. And there it is, picture 12, Caravaggio, another Baroque master from Italy, sticking his finger into the rib wound of Christ. Because he doesn't believe, he's heard, he doesn't believe. Right? Didn't he come to Magdalene first? I believe I'm correct there. Magdalene. The woman energy. The female energy. Women get this. Women have more developed centers than us guys. Not that men don't. Christ is seen first by Magdalene. That is not a coincidence to me. Christ is doubted by Thomas. That is not a coincidence to me. And there will always be people like that. When you're told, or when you declare that you can heal what was otherwise termed irreversible, difficult, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to learn to live with it. When you're told these things, these are the Thomases. What's horrid today is that much of our medical profession are the doubting Thomases. And it's not that they're evil people. It's just that they're blind. They are truly blind. Because they don't believe. Somehow, science has transmuted itself into a force that tells well-meaning physicians that they're not supposed to believe. Now, perhaps part of this is good. But it is way overstated today in modern techno society. Because just about everything you have, you're being told you're going to have to live with. That there's no way out of it, that it's progressive and degenerative, and we won't get into the lists upon the lists upon the lists of things that fit that definition. And as I say, it is the doubting Thomases that predominate in the scientific community. This is wrong. This is a mistake. It wasn't supposed to be this way. True scientists are not like that. Now, I'm going to ask you to put two and two together today. I'm going to ask you to consider that implicit in the life of Christ, there may be an organized, deliberate set of spiritual exercises, a practice, an internal practice. Going to suggest that Jesus had mastery of an internal practice. Of what internal practice, I cannot say. I can simply say that those who have died in his name along the way have been extraordinarily interested in the possibility that there are internal practices to be followed that can ignite various physiological systems, and I'll get into those in a moment. I've mentioned them already. In the interest of liberating you from the cage of your suffering, I'm going to cite I'm going to cite here picture 13. Go to picture number 13. The spiritual exercises of Ignatius Loyola. I don't want to get too much into the spiritual exercises of Ignatius Loyola. I do want to tell you that my college years were spent with the Jesuits. I do want to tell you that Ignatius Loyola created the spiritual exercises. The spiritual exercises were a meditation, a divinely inspired, systematic meditation upon the stations of the cross. Now, this is Catholicism. But let's not hedge. The point is that it's one example. And I'm not focusing solely on the spiritual exercises. I'm citing the spiritual exercises as one example of the deep followers of the Christian tradition deriving some form of practice to transform oneself internally to meet the adversity of human existence. I mean, that is what the life of Christ represents. To bring truth, to find adversity, to be tortured, to suffer deeply, and through some internal system capable of creating enormous coherence with the Father, with the heavens, with the angels, to be delivered to victory. And we celebrate that victory tomorrow. I mean, think of it. What would the life of Christ meant without the resurrection? Think about that. It was the payoff. You have to have your payoff. You were of virtuous origin. You have suffered. You may be in your 50s, in your 60s, you may have been. I meet people like this all the time. They've had 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years of their life taken away. They have suffered. Many of them have suffered. Well, for what reason? For just being. Tomorrow we celebrate an individual who may have had developed mastery through some internal practice. This is what Loyola is getting at with the spiritual exercises. Look at the book next to that, Grace, by a Jesuit named Robert Gleason. He was a teacher of mine at Fordham University years ago. He was one of the preeminent theologians of the world. He truly was. Fordham University, its theology department back in the late 70s, early 80s, was legion throughout the world. And Gleason was its department chairman. I took Dr. Gleason. There's a picture of him on page 17. Picture 17. Father Gleason, White Plains, New York, Department of Theology, Fordham University. That was a man of knowledge. I used to watch him then. He was in his 70s, I think. He's great big blue eyes shining. You could see him half a mile away, just the eyes. Walking, you know, Fordham was Victorian. It was Gothic, built in 1860. Dying at the time because it was in the Bronx. New York City, Bronx, ghetto. But it was a fortress. It was a beacon of light. And Gleason was one of its foremost theologians, and its theology department was foremost in the world. Gleason had an interest in these exercises. Gleason had an interest in grace. He wrote the book, Grace. To give love in the face of your tormentor. Do you know what that means? Do you know what it is to give love in the face of those who torment you? It means to take their pain. To absorb their pain. And to return it with love. That's what grace really means. We use the word grace too easily. Grace is what a holy person bestows upon others to help them along their way. No, slant on that is grace is what you return to your tormentor, to those who betray you. Just sitting in the presence of sin is to give it grace. You've done that. You've sat in the presence of people in various states of decay, and you've absorbed their pain, and you've given love. That is to give grace. Of course, with us, it's the human form, right? We're not that great at it. So in answer to deal with the virtue of suffering, we develop the internal exercises. How do you suffer so that you can get to the other side, so you can prosper? Ignatius Loyola prospered. The Jesuits prospered. The Jesuits were given vast amounts of respect by the Vatican. Ignatius Loyola's Jesuits grew. But enough with the Jesuits. This isn't about the Jesuits. This is about a show that asks you to consider that there just may be a way for you to deal with that which makes you suffer so that you can have bounty on the other side. And the master of it, the story of it, is the life of Christ. Okay, now, what have we been given? I'm going to do a quick sweep. What have we been given? What is inherent, authentic, and acting within us already that your average Joe is ignorant of? What physiological systems are within you already that you are generally ignorant of? Even more so, at a complete loss to deploy. What is this guy talking about? If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Health Talk Radio. We're celebrating the life of Christ today in that tomorrow's Easter. If you're just tuning in and you're suffering, consider this. Consider picture 18, the ventricular system. Those of you who are at the computer, straighttalk.cc, look at the ventricular system of the brain. Now, I've got a 3D model and it's spinning around. The ventricular system of the brain, consider that. Consider picture 20, the pituitary gland. Consider picture number 21, the hypothalamus gland. Above the pituitary gland, colored as individual sections, are these centers of neurological intelligence, places where nerves intersect, grouped together by color, because each section of the hypothalamus does something different. You're talking about the central junction box. You're talking about a place that you can talk to. So let's get down to it. What is the basis? What is the physiological link to mastery of the heavens? What is the physiological link? What is the medium through which you have a bodily experience of heaven? What is the science suggesting? The science is suggesting that something within the hypothalamus facilitates this. The science is suggesting that something within the ventricular system of the brain facilitates this. The science is suggesting that something going on in the pineal gland facilitates this. The science suggests that the flow of the cerebral spinal fluid facilitates this. The science suggests that because the pineal gland is sitting between the superior colliculuses of the brain, and it's sitting at the end of the tip of the third ventricle, that between the colliculuses of the brain and the third ventricle, that it wobbles, that if you can, through the cranial system, increase the rate of frequency, the vibrational speed of the colliculuses in the third ventricle, that it will massage the pineal to another level of hormonal production. It suggests that DMT, which we're almost positive is created and deployed through the pineal system, is another player in the game, that this facilitates this high state. Cerebral spinal fluid, the softening of the skull, the vibration of the pineal between the canaliculuses, the pineal gland in and of itself, the hypothalamus, the pituitary gland, the ventricular system of the brain. Those are seven different physiological systems. Where is this in our educational system? Why are our children not taught? Why are we not trained to develop relationship? Why are we not trained to develop relationship with body parts that can deploy chemicals that enormously facilitate our experience of God, that have profound effects upon other physiological systems? Why do we even talk about resurrection without understanding this? This is the nuts and bolts of it. This is where man and God start to have a relationship through body parts that were put there that are simply asleep. Have they always been asleep? No. I suggest to you that it's just modern man that knows little of this. Why did Descartes call the pineal the seat of the soul? Why? Why do so many tribes throughout the world understand these connections with the higher self through practices that we here in the West, masters of the science, have no sensibility of? If you study the holistic arts, if you are listening today and you're interested in holistic medicine, you're interested in chiropractic medicine, you're interested in osteopathy, you're interested in yoga, you're interested in any of these subsets of health, you have to understand that in the end, all your herbs and all your sacred dances and all your Pilates classes all lead to the discussion we're having today. Because the notion, the possibility that you're really going to get to the place where you have exercised out of your body, you have resected out of your body your deepest pains, the possibility of doing that to liberate your physiology demands understanding what I'm talking about today. Let's continue to the neighborhood of payoffs. You've seen me put YouTube clips before. You've seen me put YouTube clips before on Candace Pert. And I did once again. And we won't take the time to go into that YouTube clip today. But if you haven't listened to her talk, you really have to. If you haven't gotten the book Molecules of Emotion, you really need to. Furthermore, you need to understand DMT, dimethyltryptamine, what we call the spirit molecule, and the cutting-edge research. Because what it's coming down to, what science, and again, this is how I entitled the show today, The Resurrection of Christ. Could science lead us back to God? Can't get around it. This is 2017. It's not 200 AD. We are inundated birthed all the way to the end with nothing less than data and research and science and the rest of it. So let's shake hands with science. Let's beseech it to evolve itself. And I submit to you, you'll end back to the wisdom of Christ. The two were not meant to be separated. Because what we're finding today, what Candace Pert, neuroscientist, and a darn good neuroscientist, a reputable neuroscientist, a neuroscientist who studied with the best of the best, the top scientists of the world, and Pert was in that category. Where did she end up? She ended up writing a book called Molecules of Emotion. And she ended up testifying to the relationship between producing opiates and healing disease. Producing opiates and healing disease. When you're having a religious experience, when you have contacted the Father in heaven, when you have brought down the angels from above, when you are having that religious experience, if I go in there and measure the quantity and quality of your blood, it's filled with chemicals we today in modern science have isolated. There is no two ways about this. Religious experience testifies to the presence of higher concentration of what we call the endogenous opiates. Endorphins, enkephalins, dynorphins, and most likely DMT. This is simply another way of saying you don't get to pass go. You don't collect the $200 unless you have systematically refined yourself through a process in which you can deploy your opiates. That's what Pert was saying. That's what Pert died saying. That's what the research about DMT is saying. That's what the ancient works, the ancient manuscripts were saying. That is what the Dead Sea Scrolls are saying. That is what all the translations from original scripture, not just the Christian tradition, but world traditions are saying. That is where we are all one. And the life of Christ and the resurrection are supreme testimonies to what I am saying. Now you can have your interpretation, but last time I looked, I'm allowed to have my interpretation. And that is my interpretation, and that is what I celebrate tomorrow. But you see, that's what I celebrate every day. It's not just supposed to be one day of the year, right? I celebrate that every day because I see people do it every day. I see most people doubt it every day. I see most people spit at it every day. I see most people condemn it every day. I see lots of people in the face of it. In the face of it, they are doubting Thomas. I see it every day. I'll see it every day till I die. And I have to take the pain. And you have to take the pain. Taking the pain is part and parcel to the healing. You don't get to the healing if you don't take the pain. Who does that sound like? 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you're struggling with one of these health concerns and you're spinning because there's so much nonsense out there, so many shortcuts, so many cliff note versions, and you're mature enough in your journey to understand that you don't want to hear any more baloney, then call my office and come in and make an appointment. I will put you on the right track. The rest is up to you. You can be doubting Thomas, or you can meditate on the life of Christ. You can do the real thing, or you can do the disingenuous thing. 714-850-1007. I do an Easter show like this every year. In the beginning, I called my corporation Trinity Healthcare. I no longer do that, but originally I did. And the reason I did is because, to me, the life of Christ was always, obviously to me, the life that we were supposed to master. And it was no surprise to me that people from all walks of life have always been plotting with, like Loyola, different ways of commemorating that. Because if you really get down the life of Christ, you are armed. You are armed with an unbreakable shield to weather the storms of life and to have bounty. You see, it's not about the suffering. It's about the suffering and the liberation from the suffering. Can't leave that out, right? I was raised originally in the Catholic Church. And that was a lot of fun, and I got great educations. But back then in the 60s and 70s in New York City, there was a lot of focus on the suffering. And anybody that went to Catholic school back then knows what I'm talking about, especially on the East Coast. In the name of mortal sin and suffering, you had the hell beat out of you. In the name of God, of course. But how does that differ from the fire and brimstone of your Baptists? So we all did it. We all did it. In the name of salvation, we all went through that time in history where there was so much emphasis on the suffering, we forgot about the payoff. There really is a payoff. If you have suffered, make no mistake about it. If you have disease and you've suffered, that suffering, that emotional, spiritual, psychological suffering, has integrated itself inextricably from your symptom, from your chronic symptom, and to your disease. And under an organized fashion, whosever and whatever that organized system is, it is when you begin to liberate yourself. In other words, produce enough endorphin through the trial and tribulation of what we call a healing, a health practice, a cleanse, a stretch, a purging of emotion, a shifting of relationship. All 306 of my shows, all 300 of all shows, all of holistic medicine, all of what we call a health practice is devoted to getting you to optimize your opiate production. It is that opiate production that will liberate you. See, this is the physiology of it. It is that opiate production that will connect you to the heavens. The two are one and the same. I'm simply giving you the scientific perspective on it. Those opiates are markers, markers for the moment in which you feel cleansed of your demons, of your sufferings, of that which has afflicted you. And on the other side of that, your body will organize a healing. That is the miracle within us. And that's what I'm celebrating tomorrow. I invite you to share a similar perception of what you're celebrating tomorrow. If you are symptomatic, if you are sick, if you have suffered, if you have felt that you weren't supposed to suffer the way you've suffered, you didn't do anything wrong and you were beaten. You didn't do anything wrong and you were neglected. You didn't do anything wrong and you were sexually abused. You didn't do anything wrong and you were physically, emotionally, and spiritually just turned inside out. They're not going to tell you there's any relationship between that and your tumor and your disease. But there is. Don't take my word for it. There's Candace Pert. There's John Perakos. There's Wilhelm Reich. There's Hans Selye. There is a massive, at this point, a massive amalgam of therapists, of doctors, and of people. And really, as our beacon, is the life of Christ. He did it. He did it with such mastery. Well, he separated himself from man in this respect. He did it in a godly level. We can only try, right? We can only try to be that perfect in our own journey. Well, happy Easter to you. Again, 714-850-1007. If you're lost and swirling, give my office a call. We'll put you on the right track. Happy Easter to you. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.